Had a nice long 3-day weekend in the U.S. with Memorial Day on Monday. And we get back on Tuesday, and the week starts out like jam-packed with news before WWDC kicks off. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I know. We've been going through May with, you know, sort of kind of scraping the barrel with like a dearth of stuff. But, you know, it's Wednesday and we've had more news in the last 2 days than probably like the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, compared to like previous years, usually you know a whole lot more about what's going to happen at WWDC. There's still a lot of surprises, but you know more than you know right now. And we don't necessarily have that this year, so.
Yeah, like I think what we know about Monday's keynote at the moment is what we knew back in like February.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
You know, all based off the performance and stability, you know, overhanging themes and some of the new things, you know, like group FaceTime and emoji, that, you know, do not disturb improvements. Like, all of that stuff from February is still what we've got now. Like, we haven't really progressed on from that much.
It's like more of next year's keynote has leaked than this year's keynote.
Yeah, it's a good way of summarizing it.
Yeah. Well, over the weekend, on Sunday, I bought a kayak, and on Monday I got a chance to use it with the holiday in the U.S. And I live close to the beach in my town, and so I took my kayak and I walked it over to the water and got in. And the reason I'm sharing this here is because a few things. So one is like a brag on Apple, which is I just had my kayak, my Apple Watch on my wrist, and my Bose SoundLink Revolve Plus Bluetooth speaker. And it was so cool to be able to kayak, have no iPhone on me to worry about, and stay in touch with, like, an emergency. I would get a phone call on the watch with the Series 3 and LTE if something happened, which nothing happens. But it was just peace of mind. But also having the Bose Bluetooth speaker paired to the watch, just like a Bluetooth speaker, just like headphones, and streaming music from the watch over LTE, it just felt so cool. Like, I was kind of paddling in my kayak, and you know, logging a workout with it, and just thinking like, this is really like, this is high tech. You know,
they don't have a dedicated workout for kayaking, right?
And that, you know, that goes to my next the part where I'm not bragging and complaining, which is you know, one of the cool things is that in watchOS 4, you can do like multiple workouts stacked, where if you use the workouts app, then you can finish one. Before you end it, you hit a plus button and then you add the next workout. So I logged like the 0.2-mile walk from my front door to the beach, and I was like, okay, I mean, it counts. And then I added other and paddling, because there's no kayak, you know, workout. And then when I was done with that, when I got back to the beach, I added, you know, outdoor walk, and then it was like the 0.2 miles back home. And when I looked at the data afterwards, the outdoor walk, you know, tracks location because it knows it's an outdoor walk, and to use the GPS to track location. But the other workout, just labeled paddling, you know, kind of arbitrarily, has no location data, which made me realize, at the very least, I would like it there to be like indoor other and outdoor other. An outdoor other used the location, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Because what other does is it gives you the credit of like a brisk walk if it can't detect heart rate enough to really know what's happening. And you know, so it could be like a brisk outdoor walk instead of a brisk indoor walk. But it was just kind of a pain, like to not be able to map out where I was in the water. And really have an idea of like how far I went, and
yeah, and like obviously other all of those subcategories and other don't change the algorithm of
right.
calories and stuff. It's just it gives you a nicer icon and it labels it, which yeah. is a nice touch. But ideally, you'd have like paddling or, you know, boating as an actual workout, and they'd be able to properly map, you know, your arm movements of moving the kayak, you know, the paddle around, and
yeah,
boat.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a very rough approximation.
Yeah, long term, just have like actually more algorithms, which just takes more research, you know, before they release it. But in the short term, just have indoor other and outdoor other, or like if necessary, just add location data to all, you know, other workouts. And if the location doesn't change, then just discard it, I guess. But you know, it was kind of a disappointment. And I think like, what I can maybe do is find a third-party workout app, And then that could kind of call it kayaking and also use location. But I'm not even sure yet if third-party apps give you the map. I can't recall if third-party apps can use if they use the map, at least like in the activity app.
They can definitely obviously get your location.
Yeah, they do it in their app.
Yeah, but I don't know if they can save it back to the workout like data to the actual database.
Yeah, I'm thinking no. I can look at my activity really fast and see. But
I think it does. I think you're right. I think it doesn't.
Yeah,
and it's the same with like weather conditions, right? That's only if you go through the official app.
Exactly. Yeah, like Nike Run Club, Outdoor Run. It's got the heart. You know, it's got heart rate. It's got all the stats, but does not have location. But then if you go to the Nike Run Club app, the same run does have location, and it uses your location. So maybe WatchOS 5 that'll happen. But anyway, the idea of an outdoor other workout in the short term to give you, you know, it just feels like it hasn't caught up to even the Series 2 yet in that regard. The other thing that had me thinking was when I was using the Bluetooth speakers, the Bose SoundLink Revolve Plus, it has a lot of Bluetooth speakers have this. It has a button that you can like long press, and usually it activates Siri. In this case, you know, it's Siri in the watch. It can be Siri in your iPhone if it's paired. But it's usually like kind of a lot of like lag in between, like even on the Beats Pill Plus, which is like the Apple speaker, Bluetooth speaker. And it made me think like, you know, maybe this rumored, you know, Beats branded AirPlay 2 speaker, if it's also Bluetooth, could have some kind of special, you know, connection that works around that. You know, they design it on both sides to have a better experience with that.
Yeah, even as like, it is obviously Beats is a separate division, but they're obviously connected to Apple more closely than any third party speaker manufacturer. They get the W1 chip, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They could just do like we relay your phone, your mic to over the Wi-Fi to the iPhone somehow, you know, like using a completely proprietary protocol that no one else does. So you're kind of getting like a semi HomePod where, you know, the HomePod can't do requests on its own, but generally when you're at home, your phone's at home, so it can relay it through that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Although at that point, it's like, why don't they just put a chip in it and let it do it?
Yeah, exactly. And they do W1 in the Beats headphones, but not in the Bluetooth speaker, not in the Pill Plus yet. So that's something that's kind of left to be resolved, because the Pill Plus came about a year or two before the W1 chip and AirPods and all of that. So, but maybe things like this is kind of okay, but it could be better, you know, if there was some special connection happening. But that's kind of my weekend. It was fun. I look forward to doing more of those. You know, it was a nice kayak experience. Tell me about your privacy portal data download experience.
Yeah, I mean, the way it's phrased there, it sounds really dry, but it's actually pretty interesting. This is the online tool that Apple launched last week. It's privacy.apple.com. At the moment, if you're outside of the EU countries, there isn't much you can do there. It basically just lets you change your Apple ID or close the account. If you're in Europe, thanks to the GDPR stuff, Apple has already rolled out these new, like, takeout, download all your data that Apple knows about you tools, and this will be coming worldwide in the coming months, whatever that means. But it'll be around, you'll be able to do it eventually, but for now it's EU only to comply with the law. And this launched on like the 23rd of May, so I diligently requested my data because I was interested to see like what format it would be and what kind of information would get returned. And the kind of categories you can get like the App Store ID, you get like Game Center activity, even you get like iCloud bookmarks, you can download your photo library, you can get all your other like random, basically anything that's personally identifiable to your account, Apple will send to you. So things that are like end-to-end encrypted or things that contribute to differential privacy where it's so anonymized that Apple doesn't know where it came from, they obviously can't be back associated with you to download. But anything that is not device local that can be that is synced to your specific account, you can download it on the screen and you press submit. And stupidly, I thought it would be instantaneous, but when you press submit, it says it will take up to a week. And I think it said, like, my estimate was the 30th of May. And it just so happens that today is the 30th of May. So they did deliver. You can literally get, like, a full copy of your photo library in 25 gigabyte chunks. Like, it just sends zip files that are 25 gigabytes big and you just have several downloads. Obviously, if you're a big photo library, it's kind of a pain to do that. But you can if you want to. It's just the original photos you upload to the service with the file names retained as they were originally. There's no, like, hierarchy, so it's not, like, in a folder of month, year, day, that kind of thing. It's just a big glob of zipped compressed images. But if you want to have a quick way of exporting your photos, that's a way to do it. The what's interesting is most of the other data is more well categorized. Like, the other data section, it has, like, Apple features using iCloud, and it has, like, a folder for calendar, has a folder for events, has a folder for activity sharing, and you can, like, drill down, and they just tend to be, like, XML files or JSON files, which aren't really, like, human-readable, but if you open and texted it, you can get, you know, you don't have to be a developer to see, like, it's just, like, a value and then the result, and you can just scroll and look through it to your heart's content. For an average customer, it's not like they're really going to get much out of this, because, you know, you can download all this data and you won't know what's going on. But as, like, an Apple pundit, whatever you want to call it, it's really interesting just to kind of see what information's back there. Like, there's collections of all the music that you've told Apple Music on the HomePod to play something different. So, you know, you can say, like, play something completely different. And then one of these files just has a list of all the times you did that. Because obviously the service has to remember this data to personalize for you in the future.
Right.
But it's these just random things that you don't really think about, but they, you know, they have to collect on you. Like, there's one for the first time that you dismiss the welcome alerts, you know, like the new in 11.3, when you open, like, the videos app and it says, here's what's new in videos, and it has the privacy button at the bottom, and you press done. There's one of these files just tracks the timestamps of when you press dismiss.
It's like, that's when you gave consent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason they do it is so that if you go to the iPad, it doesn't show you the same box. Like, it can sync cross-device. But it's just so funny to see all this stuff in, like, decently readable information. And there's nothing, like, you know, there's no, like, conspiracy here. Like, oh, Apple's tracking everything, you know, stuff that we never even thought about. It's just the kind of, like, random nooks and crannies that you don't. Until you see, you're like, oh yeah, that's obviously what they do. Like, you know, the podcast analytics features they wrote at the end of last year,
right?
Where, like, if you're a publisher, you can see when people paused in the podcast, when people resumed, when they skipped ahead. One of these files has all of your personal state for every single podcast you played, like your play position, when you paused it, when you skipped ahead, when you subscribed, when you unsubscribed. It's just masses and masses of this random data, and I wonder if, like, some third party might make, like, a visualization tool to, like, plot some of this stuff. Because there's even, like, iTunes store purchases. Like, the iTunes store purchases is a CSV file which you can open in numbers as, like, a spreadsheet. And if you want to be scared, you can do a sum on the total row and find out how much money you've ever spent with the iTunes store.
Oh boy.
Like, there's just so much random, like, tidbits of information in here that it's kind of cool.
Right, yeah. I had that on my to-do list, like, years ago, was to kind of, like, audit my iTunes library and see how much, like, value was there. But it was just, like, too vast to ever tackle. So whenever these features come to the US, I might just try that.
A really funny one is there's a dedicated file just for tracking the free U2 album. Like, it's U2 Songs of Innocence album information.
Oh,
like,
man.
Because obviously they must have, like, hacked that into the iTunes store somehow, so it produces this data, and there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, if you're in the EU, do it. It's completely free, obviously. It just takes up to a week to get it. I presume that part of the reason it takes that long is that they want to, like, do some extra validation that it's not like a hacker trying to steal all your data. Because it would be a really easy way to steal data, right? Is if you compromise someone's email address, you could, like, download it. So I think that's part of the reason there's this delay. It's not just the time it takes for, like, their service to process the information.
Yeah.
There's just a time lag. So say if your account got compromised, you've got up to a week to be able to, like, cancel it and stuff. Like, that's part of the reason they have this delay in there.
Yeah, a little bit artificial. One thing I've thought about is how readable is this on iOS versus a Mac? Because it sounds like a CSV file, if you have numbers installed, like, you can handle that. But what does, like, a JSON file do on an iOS?
You might be able to open it in an external text editor if you had one. The biggest problem is these all come downloaded as zip files.
Oh, yeah.
And zip handling on iOS is not good.
Right, right.
So yeah. I would basically say you need to look at this on a Mac.
Yeah, because that was one of the things that whenever the whole Facebook episode happened, you know, they've long had the ability to download, you know, kind of export your data from Facebook to get, like, all your photos and different interactions. And even on a Mac, it looks very messy. And it's like you feel like you need to be an engineer to figure it out, like what you're looking at. But I just, when that was happening, it was in the back of my mind that probably more Facebook users are using their smartphone where that data either can't be downloaded or it comes in a format that can't be handled. And it's like, at that point, like, you're really providing, you know, an export option, or you're just doing like the bare minimum. Cause it's definitely not like polished. Like, it looks like raw data.
Yeah. And this is closer to that, right? Like,
sure, yeah.
Ideally, I think it should come with some sort of like rendered PDF file of like a summary of everything they know about you, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
We know that you visit websites like this, and we store call history like this, and recent email contacts like this, and you can dig in and see all the data if you really want to. Because, yeah, like, it is. I'm not sure if an average person really would have a clue what to do with any of this stuff. Like,
because
even me, right, I can read the JSON files, but there's not, like, an explainer of what this JSON file necessarily does. Like, you kind of have to work it out. Like, there's one that's just called, like, event kit locations, and you can view the file and see what's in it, but you kind of have to guess and kind of see, like, oh, I guess this is related to the locations you have in calendar, so the next time you go in calendar on a different device, you can do a location and it auto completes it. But like, Apple doesn't provide you that documentation. You just kind of have to like back figure it out.
The web portal itself looks very nice. Like, they've got all these categories of what you can say, you know, kind of opt into downloading, or I guess you can check in mass, don't give me anything, and then check individually what you want. But that's categorized like pretty nice, but that's just saying this is what I want, this is what I don't want, not the actual, your actual data.
Yeah, and there is some documentation on what it is, but it's not like enough that any random person could download this thing and actually go line by line and actually see it. I think it's more here so that a security expert or privacy expert could do it to their own accounts, and it's kind of like keeping transparency, right? Like, because it's legally binding that they have to provide this information. If Apple started tracking stuff that they, you know, that was kind of weird and like invasive, then a privacy expert would see it and be able to do a report on it. Or if they didn't include it, then, you know, they get fined for breaking the law.
Yeah.
So I think that's more the function it plays as a societal, like, measure. An individual person probably, like, I'm not going to download my data again. Like, I just did it for the fun of it, but yeah, I don't really have much interest in or
it's all from doing it's all, it again this time. It's all in the spirit of compliance, and it doesn't like your data is that exportable. Like, where, like, if you, like, subscribe to podcasts, you can export, like, an OPML file and, like, move to another podcast app unless you're using Apple's app. Like, that's, like, data, you know, portable data. Like, none of this is. Like, Facebook really doesn't have portable data. The same goes for, like, Apple's, you know, take your data with you. You know, it really isn't like that. It's just, like, all compliance, like, bare minimum.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, like, a third party could make, like, a transformer, right, that you give it this random format JSON file for mail, and then you can import it into another thing. But the advantage disadvantage, like, cost benefit trade off there probably isn't worth it for anyone to actually really do it.
Yeah, it's just like, it's really hard to move from a Spotify to Apple Music or the other way around, I guess. And it's not in either service's interest to make that, you know, data exportable.
Yeah, and I think that should almost become law, right? Like, to make that easier to transfer. But the way that when that came down the road, it wouldn't be through, like, downloading a JSON file, then importing it to another app. It should just be, like, send my data to Spotify, for instance.
It would be like whenever Beats Music went away and Apple had a tool to move from Beats Music to Apple Music without losing your you know, history. Like, that was a real version of, like, data migration and you know, giving you your information. So, this is a little bit different. All right, let's talk about the newest Apple Watch face that we see before WWDC and before, like, any big software update. This kind of comes in the form of watchOS 4.3.1. It wasn't in the release notes. Guy Rambo was first to discover it for 9to5 Mac, and he saw this, like, a few weeks ago in code. We thought maybe it would be a part of 4.3 itself. But it was kind of artificially restricted to be hidden until Monday, I think around noon, like whenever the keynote ends or something like that. And so he found, like, a description of it before, found further evidence.
It was like months ago.
Yeah, like before 4.3 came out. And then found further evidence of it again in 4.3.1. that it was actually present, like found the assets for it, you know, what it looked like for the first time, not just the description, and then found like the time that it was supposed to be, you know, set to be revealed. And the way it was going to work was just like you're, I think at noon Pacific on Monday, like as the keynote wraps up, you would see at some point a badge on the watch app for iPhone, and then you follow the badge and it takes you to the face gallery, and then the face gallery has another little badge and it says, you know, here's a new watch face in watch OS. And it's like nothing really, like you didn't update your watch or anything except to 4.3.1, but then this face appears. And then, or you would like stumble upon it on your Apple Watch when like changing faces and browsing through the faces. But by discovering the watch face and the time that it was supposed to be revealed, we were able to realize that if you adjust the time on your iPhone, it adjusts the time on your Apple Watch as well. And you can artificially expose the watch face. That messes up a lot of apps like Activity Data, for example, but then you can set it back to the current time and you still have the watch face unlocked.
You add the face to your, you know, like My Faces, then you can just change the time back on the phone and then you keep the face.
Yeah, you might want to like reboot your Apple Watch to kind of correct some activity data, but it works out. And then you're not like with the wrong date for a while. And I did that and it was like, I was kind of like living on Tuesday for a while. I was like, I've got all these calendar appointments and everything that are like next week. It's like, this is weird. Then I fixed it. Everything self-corrected. And then I've still got the watch face. Now, the watch face itself is like, I kind of envision it a little bit different based on the description, like maybe more like oomph and flair to it. But what it is, it's you know, six vertical colors from the LGBT pride flag. And it's like they're vertical stripes with a black background and black stripes in between, and they animate when you raise your wrist. And there's a few different animations, but other than that, it's kind of basic. Like there's just the time in the top right, a complication up there, and one in the bottom. It's kind of just like the photo's face with less customization.
Yeah, and there's no, you can't customize the face apart from changing the complications. Like, there's no different options for that.
Can't even move the time, which you can do on a. On the photo's face.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's fun for like the first four times you tap the screen because you see the different canned animations they have, and like they have all these ribbons come in from the bottom, from the top, they like flex left and right, and it's kind of cool. But then I think you quickly realize there's only like five of them,
right?
And then that's it. That's okay. That's, there we go.
Yeah, it's too bad. Like, I think it's a neat concept, and it's like playful and kind of whimsy, and I like the idea of like it surprising us and popping up like that. Like that's pretty cool. It'll especially make sense if they do another Pride band. Like they've done one in the past for employees only, and then they sold another version of it with like slight alterations that were made. You know, it was made a little bit different. You could buy it in a store. And a portion of proceeds went to different groups, but they discontinued that. Now, it makes sense, again, to sell it, and maybe it will match the watch face more with, like, a black background and, like, interchangeable stripes. And then it'll, like, they kind of, like, a complete picture. But it's just too bad that it can't – I don't think for a lot of people it'd be, like, your everyday watch face just because you're limited to, you know, how dense it is. Like, even the time is just kind of basic.
Yeah. Like, based on the description, I was kind of – anticipating something more dynamic, like the ribbons are the time, like they, you know, they fold into the shape of the hours and the minutes, kind of like on the numerals phase, how you have all those different textiles for the number that goes around the outside, like rail and dots and stuff like that. Like I was kind of imagining the ribbons flicking between the, you know, the characters of the symbols of the glyphs of the numbers, but what it really is just like a video in the background with the time overlaid on the top.
Yeah
I think it's cool as like a special event thing,
mm-hmm.
kind of like an activity challenge, right? You know, like the limited event activity challenges. I don't really think it justifies sticking around as a dedicated face. Like, nothing against, you know, LGBTQ or anything, fully supportive of all that stuff, but like this could just be an option of the motion face. Like, if you don't want butterflies or flowers, you could have like the pride ribbons. Like, I think they're gonna do it like for, there's like a pride march in San Francisco later in June, But I think it'd be appropriate if they if it just stayed around for like 2 months or whatever and then went away as like a special thing. Like, as it stands, it doesn't really hold its weight, I think, as one of the, you know, 16 options you have. Like, wow. The other faces just have more you can customize. They're richer, they're deeper. Like, even the even photo face, right? You can pick your own pictures. You can have an album or just one. And, like, what's really weird is on the photo face, if you every time you raise your wrist, or, like, on the motion face, every time you raise your wrist, it changes the particular picture it shows. Whereas on the pride face, it always shows the same video until you tap the screen to flick over to the next one. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't even, like, behave the same. It's kind of like a weird, ugly duckling, sort of. But, I mean, it's a nice idea. I just think they could have done more with it.
Yeah, I think it's... I don't agree with you in terms of, like, it disappearing and only being, like, around for a little while. And I think that there are, like, more boring watch faces than this. And so, like, the more variety... And, you know, we want way more watch faces. And it is cool. Like, you can only... You can have your watch only show, like, you know, you swipe between the faces, only have, like, four or five, or, like, whichever ones you want to use. And I think that's a pretty good way to handle having this big, this growing catalog. But I also hope that, like, maybe the minimal effort that kind of went into this is suggestive that, like, watchOS 5 has more robust watch faces. Like, this is just, like, the last taste of this limited kind of template watch face feel, because it definitely doesn't feel like, oh, this is like a whole new style, that because Apple has control of the watch faces, they can like take advantage of things that, you know, developers never could, even if there was a template for developers to use. This feels like Apple using their template again, you know, not
yeah. anything like that's what I mean. It feels very samey.
Yeah.
I think most of the faces that they have on there at the moment, like, are pretty diverse, right? Mm-hmm. And whereas this pride thing, like, could just be, instead of picking butterflies or flowers on the motion face, you pick, you know, pride stripes.
Yeah.
It doesn't really need to be its own thing.
Yeah, I think the complication arrangement is the same for that basically anyway. But you can go to the story on 9to5 Mac and, like, see it in action if you don't want to, you know, mess with your watch and date and time and do that yourself. Or just wait until Monday and it should just appear. But I think you need to be on all the latest software updates for that to happen. So if the stars are aligned, it'll happen. I hope that, you know, I think it's a cool thing. I hope that there's a new band that goes with it too, because they sold the Pride Band before and then took it away, and it makes sense to do that again. But with kind of they have like in the woven nylon spring bands, they have the black versions, like, pinstriped, and it's like that could be like the base for this. It's like there's some color on it, and then you have the new Pride Band.
Yeah,
that'd be cool version of that. All right, let's talk about all of the new software updates that we finally got this week. So, starting with HomePod, platform name not stated, 11.4. So, with the HomePod update that we got this week, it includes AirPlay 2, like, for real, and stereo pairing, calendar support, I think more languages, and we find out when HomePod will go on sale in more countries. So,
yeah, so the languages are French and German, it adds.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because on June the 18th, they will be debuting HomePod to Germany, France, and Canada. Now, Canada, Canadian French... will be coming later in the year, so it'll just be like America, you know, just be like normal American English to start with. So I don't really know why they waited for Canada now. Right. Anyway, like, why didn't they just do it in February? But whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Logistics. So I don't know.
HomePod to new countries. You have calendar support now, so backing up what we saw in the betas, and they removed it. You can now ask your HomePod to do calendar requests, and it will make events, tell you what's coming up. Pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's the same personal request infrastructure as everything else. So one iPhone only. You have to be on the same Wi-Fi network. Can't discern between multiple people, etc., etc., etc. But it's, you know, it's one off the list.
And that's region locked, right? To the US, UK, and Australia for now.
For some reason, again.
Yeah.
I'm not sure on that one. But, like, okay, this is what we want, right? They need to fill out the features. Right, that's one off the list. Okay, yep. I'll take it. The big thing is all the, like, the AirPlay 2 stereo and multi-room stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I said that when Apple shipped AirPlay 2, I'd get a second HomePod. So that was yesterday they brought out the software. When they did that, I ordered another one, and it is here. So I have joined you in being a multi-HomePod family.
Excellent, excellent. The way we learned about this coming out was I think a few publications had it under embargo that it was going to happen on Tuesday, and then like BuzzFeed accidentally posted 3 hours early, and then deleted it, and then put it back up, and Verge posted, and TechCrunch posted, but they were like, hey, you know, we knew that this was expected sometime between now and the keynote. If I would have guessed, I would have said like the most likely scenario is they release this on like Monday to the keynote. But I'm very glad that they didn't. I'm glad they didn't release it this week, because then I get to try it out before I leave for California. And it was excellent. Like 3 hours after the accidental embargo, you get to try all these new features. And, you know, a few things there. But I'm very, like, just in general overall, like, happy that they shipped this for real, because we couldn't test this HomePod stuff in beta because there's no beta for it. And I'm very impressed with how everything turned out, like AirPlay 2 and stereo pairing specifically. What about you?
Yeah, this is a really, really nice addition. And, like, there are all the multi-speaker stuff that makes, you know, like the headlines. But there's plenty of benefits to AirPlay 2 just if you just got one HomePod and maybe one Apple TV. Like, it's faster to play and pause most content. You can tell your phone to start playing on the HomePod. Like, if you come home and you're playing a podcast from the Apple Podcasts app, and you're out and about, you come back home, you walk into your living room, your HomePod's in there, you can tell your iPhone, play this in the living room, and it will just transfer instantly to the HomePod and start playing on there instead.
And playing natively on HomePod, not streaming from the iPhone to the HomePod.
Correct, yeah.
But that's controlled from like, the phone, yeah.
The Siri stuff works really well, like, basically whatever you can think of it can do. Like, for the multi-room stuff, if you've got the TV in one room and a HomePod in another, which is probably going to be the most likely situation for people at the moment, like, having two or three HomePods is still probably rare, although now you've definitely got a lot more reason to do it. But most people are going to have, like, an Apple TV and a HomePod, right? So you have, like, the living room TV and then the HomePod in the kitchen or whatever, and you can, like, ask your phone, play this in the kitchen, also play it in the living room, just only play it in the kitchen, play it everywhere, move it to the kitchen. Like, anything that you can really think of in terms of where you'd want the audio to play, Siri supports it. It works flawlessly in the day and a half that I've tried it. Really, really, really good. And obviously, you don't have to use voice control if you don't want to. You can go in the control center tiles, and now, when you have a little drop-down list, you have like the little checkboxes that you can just tick off and say where you want it to play. You get independent volume control. Again, with lower latency, like AirPlay 1 infamously has 2-second delay on basically everything. AirPlay 2, you know, fractions of a second, like so much more responsive.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, the AirPlay 2 stuff is like actually a Sonos competitor now. So before, like HomePod shipped, it had AirPlay 2 multi-room support, stereo pairing announced, you know, a year ago, and then there was like the December launch window that they missed because this wasn't finished yet. Then they knew it was going to take longer than they wanted, so they just released it, the HomePod, in February without these features. It would have taken until now, like almost a year, to announcing HomePod to actually release it with these features. So I'm glad they released it without them anyway. But you can finally say that HomePod is complete in terms of like what Apple showed. They've now released. There's a lot.
1.0 is now done.
Yeah, there's a lot left to be done in terms of like making Siri improve, but in terms of like the hardware, getting the basic, like, unique to HomePod features, you know, through software, it's done. And I think they've done a really good job. Like, I've been slowly transitioning from Sonos to HomePod with this in mind. And it's nice to have, like, one system. Now, the benefit of AirPlay 2 is that eventually, a lot of other speakers will be AirPlay 2 speakers as well. And when they're AirPlay 2 speakers, they'll show up in the Home app on iOS, just like HomePod does, and now Apple TV does. And so like a Sonos speaker or a Bose speaker can have a room name like Office, and you can tell HomePod or Siri on iPhone, play this in the Office too, and that Sonos speaker will pick up the audio, or that Bose speaker, like whatever it is. If it's AirPlay 2, it's speaking the same language. And that'll be really cool. But you can already get a really good taste of that with HomePod and Apple TV. And in my case, like we've got Apple TVs in different rooms of the home. And then we've got I've got two HomePods in the office for stereo, and then one in the kitchen to cover a few rooms. Like through that, you can get music like all over the house. Like it's kind of neat how it is, because it's not like we've done that intentionally. Like we bought those Apple TVs just to have, you know, Apple TVs in different rooms, and now it becomes whole home audio, and that's really like it's like a nice benefit.
And everything's in sync.
Mm-hmm, like, yep.
It works how you'd expect it to.
Yeah.
I didn't have any real problems. Like, I mean, it's been in and out of testing for almost a year now. So you'd expect it to be pretty well locked down, and definitely seems like it. I have had no issues really at all with the actual, like, what it can do.
Yeah. I mean, as it's been in beta, Apple could have released way too early a shaky version of it. The Siri control stuff wasn't really there until this last beta when it actually came out, but the multi-room stuff you could try before, and it wasn't good yet. And like they definitely waited until it was done to release it, you know, which, you know, it's too bad that it took so long, but I don't think they're releasing it like on a deadline. Like they definitely waited until it was done.
Yeah. And like I mentioned that you can talk to Siri on the iPhone, like you can talk to the HomePods as well. Like,
yeah,
you talk to your kitchen HomePod, play this in the bedroom, mm-hmm. and it will just connect to the HomePod in the bedroom and do it.
Yeah.
Like, just everything that you'd like think makes sense, it supports.
Yeah. So the talking to Siri works on iOS. So that's iPhone, iPod Touch, and HomePod. It doesn't work on the Mac yet, which is, you know, kind of a request eventually. And it doesn't work on the watch, which is too bad, because to me, like, the watch Siri, I want it to be so good because it's always on me no matter what. And I've always got voice activation turned on for it. So to be able to go anywhere and have on my person, have Siri, you know, be there to control anything would be great, but we're not quite there yet. So
yeah, I don't really understand why it's so hard for them to do it on the watch. Like, just proxy it to the phone if you have to, if you're at home.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
It doesn't really need an independent AirPlay 2 stack. Like, just send the request to the phone and let it do it. I don't really get that. That's like one of the weird omissions there is.
Yeah, maybe next week. But support on the Mac is also like very weak. Like in iTunes, you do see, like in iTunes, when you go to the AirPlay menu for now playing content, there's two kind of hierarchies of AirPlay. There's like peer-to-peer AirPlay, the old stuff, and even like a stereo pair of AirPod or HomePods will appear as two different speakers, so that they doesn't see the stereo pair. But further down, you do see like the AirPlay 2 stuff, where it's the Apple TVs and it's the HomePods and like future AirPlay 2 speakers. And there you see the paired HomePods, the stereo HomePods. But that works really well. It's just system audio for the Mac only sees peer-to-peer AirPlay, not stereo. And it's just like confusing to have that mess where it's not just one thing, you know, it's like AirPlay 1 and 2 coexisting in certain places and certain corners.
Yeah. And just to clarify, even on the as of yet unreleased macOS 10.3.5, the sound menu on the menu bar doesn't support the AirPlay 2 stuff.
And 10.13.6, because now we're on two betas of macOS that haven't been released yet.
That is a bit stupid.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I've got my two HomePods set up at the moment in a stereo pair in my room, and so now I just have HomePod and HomePod bracket 2 bracket on the Mac, and you can individually address them, so it'll only send to one or the other. But it's like, you know, all my other devices now can do the stereo stuff, but the Mac can't. Like,
yeah,
because I never use like the iTunes one. I'm always like playing a YouTube video or whatever, you know, and doing the sound menu. But
yeah,
now I'm gonna be like, ooh.
So that's a good example is that on YouTube or Netflix on iOS you can do AirPlay 2 audio, but on YouTube or Netflix from the Mac you can't yet. because it's not in iTunes. And if it's in iTunes, then you can for Apple Music, but not podcasts, because they just haven't finished that yet. Like it says.
So is the reason it's not on the Mac because the Mac doesn't have HomeKit? Because, you know, like HomeKit and AirPlay 2 are kind of connected.
I would guess so. Yeah.
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 So hopefully that means that the next one will.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, macOS 10.14 comes out and watchOS 5 is out and nothing's changed yet in, like, the first several betas, but, like, before it ships, that maybe it'll be there. Because
it feels like they have to, right? Like,
and surely, like, for development, like, they've literally just finished work on AirPlay 2 for iOS and HomePod and tvOS, and they've probably not done, like, more than what they've released for Mac and Watch, I would guess, but, you know. For the stereo stuff, so we kind of saw like a peek of what it would look like in previous betas. We just couldn't actually use it. But now we can because the releases are out. The whole HomePod update process is a little bit good, a little bit weird. What's good about it is that you can update away from home, because all it does is like checks in with your HomePod on Wi-Fi, and it's like, okay, it's on a network, and then you're just saying like yes, update it, and it isn't like coming from your phone to the HomePod. It's just like going from the internet to the HomePod. So you can be away from the HomePod and still update it. The bad thing about the process is that it's really not transparent. There's no indicator for like how well it's doing.
Yeah, it has an indeterminate spinner. It doesn't have a progress bar of a percentage readout.
Yeah, and if you have like three HomePods, just one spinner. You know, two HomePods is one spinner. So you're just like, okay, I guess they're still going. And there's like, I think that the top of it turns white, but you know, you're looking at each one to see like, is it done yet? And there's just no time estimate. So that part is weird.
Yeah, the top of it only turns white once it's finished downloading. So when it's installing it, the top turns white. But when it's downloading, you just have no idea.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because the HomePod I just bought today came with the original firmware 11.2.5. So to get to 11.4 on it, I had to do the full like 2.5 gig download because they didn't add the incremental updates on HomePod to like 11.3.
Yeah.
So as well as moving my HomePod previously from yesterday, which only was like 100 meg update because it did it incrementally, my brand new HomePod I just bought took like ages, and I didn't know what Wi-Fi network was on, and I was just kind of sitting there staring at this spinner like, I hope it's going to do it. Come on, you're going to do it? And then luckily it did sort it out, but it was like, yeah. I mean, going forward, it would be better because obviously at some point they're going to run out of the initial stock and they'll all start coming with newer firmware versions.
Yeah.
But like getting the HomePod home and being like, right, let's do a stereo pit. Oh, I've got a 3 gig download.
Yeah. And okay, by the way, I think going from 11.2.5, which is like 1.0, to anything else was like a multi-gigabyte update. But then going from the second one, 11.3 to 11.4 was like just like a couple hundred megabytes.
Yeah, because 11.3 was the one that added the like OTA, you know, diffed update.
Yeah, yeah. Updates. Even though it had no new features, it was the bigger update. And then the one with actual new features is a smaller update,
yeah.
which in theory is much faster. You know? In terms of like setting up the stereo pair, if they're in the same room, I think it kind of suggests it for you, and then you can pick. So for me, I had HomePod and HomePod 2, or Office HomePod and Office HomePod 2, and I knew which on my desk was left and right. And so without even being in the room, I could just like say, you like tap the indicator and it switches what it suggests for you. So then I was happy that it, you know, Apple's description kind of makes it clear that it is stereo left and right channels. Like if you've got an audio file with one sound only coming out of the left channel like 100% and another sound coming out of the right channel 100%, then like you're gonna get that separation. It's not gonna like muffle it or not do anything like too smart for its own good. It's actually gonna be separate channels. And you know, I'm glad they didn't just do like some intelligent stuff that you can't make out what's happening.
It's like a combination of the two, I think. Like,
yeah.
They because on the website they kind of say like if you pair two together you'll get a fuller sound with like richer bass, and you do get like if you have an audio track that goes to the left it goes to the left, and you have an audio track that goes to the right it goes to the right, but you also do get like for me I have them flanking my desk and it kind of just makes like a better soundstage in the center right where I'm sitting. Like I think part of the reason why they emphasize the, you know, like fuller sound versus left and right is just that a lot of modern day music is mixed to be mostly central in where the sounds are.
Mm-hmm.
And so like all the stuff that comes in on the edges are just kind of like accents on top of it. And you kind of have to dig to find songs that are really like taking advantage of like the stereo stuff. But when you do, you can hear very, very distinctly which is coming from the left and which is coming from the right. And you can like separate out the instruments.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I was afraid that kind of based on the description before that it would be not like what I'm used to with like having headphones in where you can tell like this is coming out of this channel, this is coming out of that channel. But it's just what I would want, you know, with good separation. This is true with Sonos. This is true. I imagine with like all speakers, but when you go from one to two and you have a true stereo setup like this, it makes a big difference. Like, you know, the price goes from $350 to $700 for one unit in that case. But what you get back is, I think it's noticeably, it's like a dramatic difference in terms of sound
quality. Yeah, it's substantially better.
Yeah. I kind of spoiled it a little bit by doing the iTunes trick where you AirPlay to two speakers, you know, because on iTunes you could always target multiple speakers, but you just couldn't from iOS. And so I've been doing that a little bit, but then that's not like stereo separation. And then you can use an app just like trick it, but it wasn't great. So this is the first time that I've actually been able to like actually hear what stereo HomePod supposed to sound like. And I'm just as happy with it as I am with like stereo Sonos speakers, which is a good thing. You know, it's like it meets that level of quality. And it's just so much better to me now. Like there are a few things that are weird about it. Like audio, like music sounds way better to me. If it wasn't for the cost, I would want to have every HomePod be stereo, but I'm not like, in the kitchen, it's like it covers a bigger room, like kitchen, dining room, living room, of open space. And it would make more sense to have like stereo HomePods in there, but I want like I listen more in the office, so that's why I've got it in the office, which is like a smaller room. But it's just it makes a good enough difference that this is where I've got my stereo set up. And so like it's awesome for music. It's good for podcasts. Like podcasts, you're not going to get like a stereo's not going to make a killer difference, but it's just like it can be louder. But then like Siri, the way Siri works is, it only responds on one HomePod in terms of like which one lights up, and it tends to be whichever one is closer to you. But it's making some kind of a decision there. And sometimes
I think based on very little messing around, uh-huh. I think it's like it tries to work out which one's close to you. And if they're about the same, it just does the one you interacted with last.
Yeah. Yeah. So Siri comes, the sound comes through just one HomePod, which I was expecting it to be both HomePods, like stereo Siri twice as loud, which maybe people will complain, but like that's what I wanted, and you just get Siri through one.
The same. Yeah, I think it's very disorientating that it only comes through one side. Like,
yeah.
I'm not even in a big room, like it's like an 8-foot, wide thing. If I was in like a proper living room here and they were further apart, I think it'd be even weirder. Like you get used to the music being in the middle, and then you ask Siri something and suddenly it's like you're the stage assistant is shouting something to you far in the distance. You know, it's like it's kind of, you almost want to look to the right even though there's nobody there. Does that make sense? It's kind of weird. Like you're listening forward to the music, and then it's jarring to be like, oh, now this, you know, not real, but it's a person talking to you like off stage, center right. It's, I don't know why they don't let it just say it on both. Like, yeah. It's always, the microphones work on both. Like, it's listening on both sides, but just one answers.
Yeah, and then if you do a phone call, so if you're, like, on your iPhone and you transfer the phone call to the HomePod for speakerphone, it's just whichever one you last did Siri with, whether that be by voice or by touch. And so, like, earlier today, I had a phone call planned, and I wanted to use, like, speakerphone, you know, mode like you do often. And so I, like, touched Siri on the closest one to me, just so that would be the one that phone would go to. And maybe that's, like, more reasonable, but I just expected, like, everything to be stereo, and it kind of makes a choice about what is stereo and what is not.
Yeah, I'd love to hear, like, the HomePod design team's reason why it only comes out of one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's something that I can't, you know, like maybe it makes sense until you, if you tried stereo, but like, oh, it shouldn't come out of one. But I think it, in the current experimentation, I can't see why they did it that way.
Yeah. But other than that, like, I am over the moon about how Stereo turned out. Like, it should be good for $700, you know, and it is good for $700. It's like it. I was disappointed whenever, you know, HomePod came out with without Stereo. I had a Stereo setup of Sonos speakers, Play 5s, and there was just no way that, like, one HomePod was going to beat my Stereo Play 5 setup. Like, it's a $350 speaker versus a $1,000 speaker in your setup. I'm not sure that HomePod, like, beats the Play 5s, you know? It's still, you know, you're paying a premium for having a voice assistant built in, and the speakers are just not the same. But it's definitely, like, in that range of quality. Like, it's
competitive to that.
Exactly. And maybe just kind of, like, the preference and, like, what you're listening to, and feature set too. I think feature set's a big one. But for what it is, like, I'm super happy with Stereo support. If I could afford it, I would have, like, Stereo HomePods, like, all over the place, you know, but
it's, yeah, you'd have multi-room with everyone being Stereo.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think about it though? Like, what is your impression so far?
I was enjoying the HomePod enough, like, since we got it, that when AirPlay 2 came out, I was like, oh yeah, I'll buy another one, I'll be happy with it. And I was saying that mostly for the multi-room. Like, I have this one in my office, and I'm probably going to end up putting the other one somewhere in, like, the living room or the kitchen or something for, like, the whole family to use. But I am impressed with how the Stereo works. I think in a smaller room, it's less vital. Like, it kind of feels a bit over... Like, it's good, right? It does sound really good. And you can hear all the instruments, and it feels more engrossing as, like, an overall sound. Like, kind of what they pitched as it being, you know, like, a whole... It fills the room more, you know? And obviously it makes sense. It's now coming from two places. But if you're in, like, a smaller room, you're probably fine with just one, and having... Doubling up is probably overkill, if you know what I mean. Like, it doesn't... I think if you're in, like, your main living room, then, yeah, if you can afford it, you should definitely get two. I think I'll end up unpairing and just using them as multi-room, you know, as multi-room independent ones.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely fine, right? And, you know, you don't have to... It's not like you're forced into one choice, right? Like, you don't have to buy it being, oh, this is going to be the Stereo pair HomePod. Like, you can use it as a Stereo pair. Even if you just have a party, right? You could bring two into the same room, set them as a pair temporarily, mm-hmm. have your party, and then the rest of the year just have one upstairs and one downstairs. Like, there's obviously the flexibility to do that. I'm very, very impressed with it, and it sounds better than what I expected the Stereo to sound, which I guess is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But for my current room space, it probably makes more sense. Like it's not so good that I would then consider buying three and then putting one in the house and having two out here, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I think I still have reservations about, you know, the rest of the HomePod thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Start a phone call. All of that stuff we've talked about before, right? Mm. I don't want to repeat it all. But I think this multi-room and Stereo really completes, like, the music side of, you know, the Apple Music speaker.
Right,
like,
exactly, yeah.
You haven't got the asterisk of it's like, oh, it's a Sonos competitor, but, you know, this doesn't work and this doesn't work. And what's really, really exciting to me is that I can have these two HomePods, and then maybe at Christmas time there'll be the Beats AirPlay 2 speaker that's, like, $200, and you can just put that in the kitchen. Like, the fact that you can mix and match between, you know, a hopefully decent selection of different AirPlay 2 offerings.
Yeah.
It's really, really compelling. And obviously including Sonos, right? It's like, you talk about it like Sonos versus, like, the HomePod now, but really, you have one HomePod, you could have the rest of your speakers, you know, the Sonos 1 and the 3, like, the recent Sonos speakers will all just interoperate with it, and you can just talk to the HomePod and do it. Like, I think it's a great, great thing they've done here.
Yeah, Sonos 1, Sonos Play 5, Sonos Play Bass.
Three?
And not 3.
Not three, okay.
Any with touch control. It's three on the market right now. And then I think next week on Wednesday, they're probably going to announce a new Play Bar that will have touch control, and that'll be an AirPlay 2 speaker as well. Now, I have asked them, like, is there any new timeline for when this is going to be available, you know, through Sonos? And nothing new yet. But, I mean, the first step was always going to be Apple releases AirPlay 2, and then other speakers, you know, catch up. and support it, but they couldn't release it until Apple was done. And it sounds like they've done like actual testing. I mean, just to determine which speakers can handle it and which can't, they've had to have some experience with working with it. So I think they're originally like AirPlay 2 was supposed to be, you know, last December, and then they were going to be sometime this year. So it was always going to be like some gap. But hopefully it's sooner than later. And the same for, you know, every other speaker maker, you know, including Beats, you know. The way Apple describes stereo, I'm just going to read verbatim from what they say, because it's what made me hopeful that it would be, you know, closer to like true stereo. And this is what they say. They say, with an A8 chip in each speaker, each HomePod is able to play its own audio channel left or right while separating out both the ambient and direct energy. This innovative stereo sound provides a wide, almost three-dimensional sound stage for an incredible listening experience anywhere in the home. A HomePod stereo pair creates room-filling sound with greater bass extension, resulting in a deeper, more accurate reproduction of low frequencies. And that's, I mean, the way, if I had to like describe it in one word, it would be complete. It's like, this is how like this music was designed to sound, you know. It's just like with headphones. Like, you get a better experience with headphones and like a mono speaker, and now HomePod can do that. Because before, like, HomePod, I mean, it was like a complex speaker. It wasn't just like a mono speaker like shooting audio in one direction, but it also wasn't like I could never make out like left and right, you know.
Yeah, like the point of the like the HomePod is really what, like, six speakers and the bass thing, but that was never, at least in, you know, in reality, it never really did left and right separation. It's more about just being able to fill a bigger space, right, rather than just shooting into one direction of the room. It kind
of the idea was there was no bad spot to put the HomePod, that it could adjust to the room and like sounded good in every place, not just like the center of the room, but like the corner too.
Yeah, and that's mostly true, but it was always about like beaming one sound. Like, it wasn't like you have two separate sound waves, if you see what I mean. It's still kind of like one wave just spread out.
Right, exactly, yeah.
The actual stereo pairing, you know, you actually get noticeably to the human ear, like, there is music coming on the left side that is not coming on the right side.
Yeah, I mean, before the show today, I was seven speakers, so we'll say seven speakers. Before the show today, I was sending you, like, I was going through my iTunes library and, like, finding songs that I knew would sound good in stereo. And every one of those, I was just, like, jazzed. I was just like, oh, yeah, here we go. Like, this is great. And I think I was probably, like, oversharing with you. But, like, you could pick out, like, that this is an instrument coming out of this speaker, and then the rest of it is not that speaker, right? Like, it's noticeable, the channel separation. Plus,
yeah, and it's not as good if you, like, still, if you're trying to think of, like, audio behind you, for instance, like, you still, I think your brain still works it out, but it does do a better job of that now, of, like, you can have sound more at the extremes, and it kind of feels like it's coming back there.
Yeah, and if it's not, like, one of those songs where it's dramatically mixed so that it, you know, it's channel separated. If it's like even in some of the songs I sing, like when you get past the introduction, like to the chorus, and it's just like very loud. And then it feels like there's one speaker, like kind of like one speaker, but it's not on either side of you. It's like in the middle of you. Like on my desk with the HomePod on either side, it sounds like if I had to like close my eyes and touch the speaker, I would just reach out straight forward. I wouldn't like,
yeah, it's like it sounds like it's coming out your laptop.
Exactly, yeah, which is crazy. Like, you know, but that's the stereo effect. And then it's like that further makes it like jarring whenever a Siri is just like one speaker, and it's like, oh, the illusion's broken, you know. But I am very impressed. Like, this is what we've been waiting for. I don't think they did anything like amazing here, like more than what they promised, but they ship what they promised, you know.
And I just want to stress, like, even if you have just one HomePod, you're going to get benefits from AirPlay 2.
Yeah,
like,
try update everything, and then try, you know, telling Siri on your iPhone to play something on the room name speaker, you know, being HomePod. And if you have an Apple TV, update that and do the same thing, and then like play around with commands, like play this everywhere, play this on room name, play this, you know, on the room name too. And it's neat. It's like controlling by voice, like you would want, you know. As bad of a reputation Siri has, like, this is a Siri feature in part, and that they've done well. Let's see. So, I mean, the only thing I was going to say is that whenever you have, like, this is a challenge I had with Sonos as well, is that and purchasing, you know, it's like you can get a better sound with stereo, but then there's also a benefit of multi-room, like whole home audio. And, you know, unless like money is an object, then you've got to make some decisions. Like, do you want stereo in one room? Or like you're talking about, do you want to have a HomePod here and a HomePod there? And it's like, yeah, you're like deciding between like sound quality or location, like, you know, like quantity over quality, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm definitely leaning to the multi-room thing. But say if for whatever reason we had like a garden party and 20 people came around and they're all in the living room, because it's substantially better, I would unpair, you know, I would pair them together just for that day and then get the benefit of the stereo, and then when everyone went home, you can go back and just put it back in the other room. Like, it's good that flexibility is there. Like, you wouldn't want to do that day in and day out because it just gets a bit annoying. But if you have it as a multi-room setup for, you know, 364 days of the year, and then that one time you have like a special party or a birthday or something, you can bring them together and get like the more immersive sound in the bigger space.
Yeah, like it almost feels over the top to group these as one speaker. But like I said, like it really is, like, you know, if you're looking for audio quality, it delivers, and like that's what you get. So and also, like, I think like 1% to like 30% volume, you might not appreciate stereo. But if you're able to play at higher volumes, like maybe if you live like in an apartment or like a shared space, you might not even be interested because you can't really appreciate it. But if you can play at higher volumes, and like that's something you want to do, like
I don't know if this was my brain just playing tricks on me, but I felt like at 10% volume, it's louder when it's paired as two.
That makes sense.
I don't know why, but that's what it's like. I was turning my volume down just to get it to a normal level more. It was weird.
Yeah, what you mean, like maybe 10% is like it's not
30% on a normal one.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And the reason I want stereo in my office is because now I have my treadmill in the office. It's where I work from. So, like, during the daytime, I write better when I'm listening to music. And so, like, I've got music going, or I play a podcast. I'm like, I'm not kind of writing. But like, the volume is important for me because with the treadmill going, that's noise. And I also have like a fan when I'm on the treadmill, so it's like I'm not getting too hot, and then that's noise. And so it's nice when no one's home to just like play really loud music, and you know, you just get the best experience with a true stereo setup. So I'm over the moon about it, and it's such a treat to get it before WWDC so we can give it like a full episode and actually use it while I'm at home and not out of town. Just like the HomePod launch, I would have been a little left out there if I was
a hotel review.
Yeah. And then maybe next week, you know, we get some new HomePod stuff. But I if we don't, I think it'll be too bad, but at least we've got this to chew on for a little while. You know. So
yeah, I mean, obviously they did like the calendar thing in this, but I'm hopeful that there'll be some more like HomePod advancements as part of wrapped into whatever happens at the keynote. Maybe that isn't like a HomePod specific feature, but just, you know, general improvements to Siri that also apply to the HomePod, for instance. Like, there is cross-pollination there.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, we discussed before, like, what will happen? Will it be a HomePod section, or will it be, you know, a Siri section or an iOS section, you know? And I think
nothing. That'd be really sad.
Or nothing, yeah. Yeah. So but like, you know, like I said, generally, like, I'm very happy with this. And the AirPlay 2 stuff, like, it is a little bit confusing to understand, and so it takes like some studying and some, like, I think the best way to understand it is to use it. But, you know, try it out. It's good stuff. So other than the HomePod this week, you know, all the updates, you know, for iOS 11.4 and tvOS 11.4, the WWDC app updated. And this is always fun because it gets a new app icon, but it usually means nothing, just like the theme of WWDC. But this time they really took the theme that we've seen from the invitations and all the artwork, where it's like depth, and they applied it to the icon. And maybe it means something and maybe it doesn't. What do you think?
Probably means nothing, but it sure is a really nice looking icon. It's so pretty. I tweeted like a bigger version of it, so you can like see it normal res, like full res.
Yeah.
It's really pretty. It's got like the dark gray, it's got the Apple logo on the top, and then obviously they've updated the design of the actual like interface itself. They have some new like filtering options for sessions and stuff, and even like the share button again isn't a boxy square thing like we've talked about before. This one is another variation on the slightly bolder rounded corner share icon stuff. So right down my alley, and I hope they're going to standardize this in 12, but I wouldn't use the WWDC app as evidence either way.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just like the running joke, right? Like the WWDC app has this crazy theme and then iOS does nothing similar to it at all.
And yeah.
Rinse and repeat for like 5 years in a row. Maybe one time, coincidentally, it will be correct, but I wouldn't, as much as I really want it to be, I can't like legitimately like say it with any, you know, just be like empty words. Like,
well, it's
the WWDC app means iOS 12 is going to be all shadows and depth and stuff, but
yeah, it's like it's like an event theme, and that every event needs a new theme, and you wouldn't want to have, you know, say you have three events a year, you wouldn't want iOS to change with every event theme. Like, it's fine for a keynote, it's fine for, you know, an invitation, but you wouldn't want, like, your actual phone to look different every 3 months, I don't think. But in this case, like, it just so happens that this is something that people are asking for, you know, more depth, more richness in the design, and you know, more realism. And it just so happens that I think that there's a lot of overlap with what people want and what this theme is. But then, you know, iOS is going to look kind of the same as it always does, at least this year. But they've, you know, whoever's designing this stuff, like, they definitely got a handle on, like, how to make, you know, three-dimensional stuff. Like,
yeah, put them on the iOS design team.
And it is not that, like, Apple doesn't make, you know, modern design that, you know, uses elements like this. Like, watchOS and tvOS do this kind of stuff.
Yeah, tvOS especially is very heavy on, like, shadows and
realism. Yeah, like it's made to be like a metaphor of like something physical, without looking, you know, dated. And
yeah, it's not skeuomorphic, right? But it just has better use of drop shadows, some nicer borders, like more tasteful use of transparency, and clean lines where it needs to be, not just like laying in the air.
Yeah, and even the Mac has some elements of this too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's just that iOS is heavy on almost like being like a web page where it needs to like adapt to different screen sizes and orientations and it's stuck in that. So, but anyway,
it's nice. I really do believe that they will change it up. It's just when. It's like,
sure, yeah.
Is it going to be this year? Is it going to be next year? Is it going to be the year after that? Like, again, we talked about this to death, but like most of the newer apps that they do have better designs, right? That take more advantage of rounded rectangle buttons and bolder toolbar icons. It's just applying that theme like across the whole system, not just in these like selective places when they do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they've also changed, so it's not just the app icon, they've got some new sticker packs. You know, the sticker pack's been updated, which is cool to see. They're maintaining that. The watch app is still around. They've updated the Apple.
The watch app is still around. That'd be so funny if the Apple WWDC app continued the trend and killed off its own watch app.
Yeah.
That'd be so sad.
Yeah. I am so nervous to see what happens next week, because if like nothing good happens for developers for watch apps, and it's just going to be all that's left is pretty much the system apps and a few good apps. Yeah. You know, beyond that. But. And even the system apps like don't take full advantage of the hardware yet. So, aside from that, the Apple TV events app has been updated, and that just is like the same theme. So we've got all this depth from these icons, and then the actual apps, you know, you don't get the same thing inside. But it's a good teaser. And with that, let's shift over to our macOS wish list and anything else that's kind of like a prediction or a guess for WWDC, because we're just days away now. My list is pretty short. I don't know about yours.
Yeah, mine. I do not have as much off begging for Apple to do on the Mac than I do on the other ones.
Yeah,
it'll definitely be a shorter segment.
I was looking back on a story I wrote a few years ago that was one of these kind of themes, and it was you know, looking for it was two versions ago, and one of the requests was for the Photos app to have like a Places feature again, and that came. There were a few more things that I like asked for, and they actually, you know, one was Night Shift for the Mac, and they added that. It's like, oh, it's pretty cool. This year my list is kind of short. I'll kick it off by saying, I wouldn't mind if Siri was like, it can already be an icon on your dock. It can be a keyboard shortcut. It can be in your menu bar. Although I don't think most people like that, but and it's not even like full screen, like on iOS, it's like its own window, but it's easy to dismiss. You can pin things to your today view, like results that get updated. But what I would like is like Siri to be like a floating window kind of. And it doesn't have to be like stay on top, but just like be persistent as an option. You know, like you can dismiss it if you want. But I've got menu bar apps like this, like Fantastical, where it can be in the menu bar or its own window, or like pulled off of the menu bar as like a mini thing. You know, and I think Siri, it would be just totally natural for that to happen, and then it would just, you know, it could be useful to have that.
I mean, they could even, if it's just floating around, they could make it like the quick apps launch, you know, like on Spotlight on iOS, where it gives you like the four apps it thinks you're going to want to launch.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
They could put that there as like the filler. So rather than just having, you know, like a waveform the whole time when you're not talking to it, they just put like some basic suggestions on what you might want to do next.
Especially if you've got a bigger display. I mean, that's one of the annoyances about how the Today View is like part of Notification Center. It's like, you know, some people might want to have those, both of those always open because they're...
This is actually one of my... suggestions on my list is like having the sidebar that is Today View Notification Center be like always there, not like you click it in and toggle it in and out.
Right,
just have it fixed there. Like I have a 15 inch MacBook Pro, but I use it, you know, in coordination with a, you know, 26 inch external display. On that external display, I'd love just to have like the Notification Center always there, and I could just always see the little widgets in there and the alerts that come in. Because I have a real problem on the Mac where I know if I go in the Notification Center right now, there'll just be stuff from like 2 weeks ago. It'd just be like full. Because I never go in there, right? Like it's never in my periphery to think to go there like it is on the iPhone and the iPad. So I the only time I use notifications on Mac is when they're on the screen as the banners, right? As soon as they fly off, I never go and check it again. I never clear it out. Like if they made it like a fixed sidebar, they could kind of kill off dashboard for good. You know, use the Today View there to give you the widgets. And keep like the notifications like in mind.
Yeah.
So I just have it there. You'd still have the desktop to the left with the, you know, the icons and the folders move around, but like a third of the screen or a fifth of the screen would just be the sidebar that is currently like toggleable on and off.
Yeah, I do use Notification Center a lot on the Mac, and it's because I've got a hot corner in the top right for Notification Center open. So I put a mouse there in the corner, it pops open, and I'm like, you know, scroll through, click an app to like respond to a tweet or a Slack message. Right there, kind of like an app launcher, really. And then I often do the clear all button, because on the Mac you can clear a day at a time, you know, without there's no like special trick to it. It's just like a button that you click. Now I rarely use the Today View, which would be a good like permanent thing to have open, but just the fact that you didn't go and check it, it's like, nah, I'll just use an app for that. You know, you use another app.
Yeah, like say if I got the stocks widget, I can type stocks into Spotlight to Google it.
Sure, yeah.
Or I can go move my mouse all the way to the top right of the screen, press the little thing, and if it's on the notifications tab, then I got to press the segmented control to switch to the Today View. Like, if it was just on the screen all the time, it would be, you know, actually useful.
Yeah, the fact that it's a segmented control to see it is what gets me, because I can do a gesture or a hot corner to open Notification Center, but then I need to also click for Today, and it's like, and then scroll to see which widget. So, I wish that would improve. Also, in the realm of Siri, is SiriKit a thing on the Mac at all?
No.
Okay, so SiriKit from Mac, and you know that means like being able to.
You knew the answer to that, didn't you?
Yeah, I know. It's like
truth.
Talk to things. You know, my task manager. You know that there are things on the Mac, like you don't have Uber on the Mac, right? But you do have things on the Mac, like things, is, you know, literally things on the Mac. You know that would apply, and you know maybe in the future you get an audio intent for Siri, and you'd be able to, you know, control if there was an app for the audio player, like, you know, if you could control Spotify or an Overcast, then that would be cool. It'd be useful.
Yeah.
But right now, there's no.
One thing I'm going to suggest here is that they might. What I'm kind of hoping they do is offer a cloud Siri Kit option where a developer can make, instead of like all the Siri Kit processing being local to each like app binary,
yeah,
it would communicate with an internet server, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, so say if you are, you know, Spotify, you don't have to code all the Siri Kit stuff on the Mac, all the Siri Kit stuff on the watch, all the Siri Kit stuff on the phone. It could like talk to, you know, like a web endpoint, right? And then just feedback the results to the local client app. So, because this is what, this is how the model of Alexa and
Amazon made a desktop computer, this is how it would work.
Yeah, all of their integrations are based on cloud requests, right? They talk to different servers to get you your replies, whereas app at the moment is entirely client side, which is why you get weird things like the HomePod can't do certain things because it can't talk to the phone to do it. Like, mm-hmm. all of these like weirdness would be smoothened out if they had the option of doing like Siri Kit on the server. And yeah. you could have both, like, and just keep running both in parallel. Like, if a developer wants to use the on-device one, they can. And if they want to do the server-based one, they can. Especially for audio-intent stuff. Like, you know, where does Spotify get its music from? It doesn't get it from the device. It gets from the... It streams it off the internet, right?
Right, so right.
Just being able to do the requests to the database on the network already, it just kind of makes sense, right? Rather than having all these, like, intermediary apps that, you know... Because all that happens with Spotify, say if they did add an audio-intent... The Mac would talk to the Spotify app binary. The extension would then just go to the website, get the response, which then goes back through the chain all the way out. Like, it'd just be a lot more direct if it would just go straight to the server and back again.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the next thing is feature parity for Siri. Like, there are some crazy things that you can't do on the Mac on a computer that you can do on iOS. And an example, setting a timer. Like, you can't set multiple timers on a HomePod. I don't think you can set one timer on Mac.
You, like, cannot, because you do not have a clock app.
Yeah, like the solution is to set a reminder for a certain time. And it's just like, you know, if Siri has one name, it should have one feature set for the most part. And that's just not the case today. You know, there are some specialized things. Yeah,
like there are exceptions probably to that rule where it doesn't make sense. But setting a timer, no reason it can't be everywhere. Including Apple TV, by the way, that has the same problem.
Yeah, yeah, doing math. I think Apple TV can't do math. So it's, yeah, please, one day, you know. And then from our discussion earlier, AirPlay 2. So, right now you can tell your iPhone, thankfully, to play, music or podcast, including video podcast. Like on that, you can say, like, play this on the living room Apple TV, you know, and it will do that. Same for HomePod, but you can't do that from the Mac. And like you said, it's probably because of HomeKit. So, you know, HomeKit support for Mac. Even if there's no app yet, like start like they did with iOS and tvOS, where they have the HomeKit framework behind the scenes, Siri controls it, and then do an app in the future if you need to do an app. Like, I think that'd be useful. It kind of blows my mind that you can have a HomePod and not set it up from a Mac. So that you should be able to do that, but so HomeKit support, even if there's no Mac.
Yeah, I have Home app on my list, like, explicitly.
Okay,
yeah. I think at this point, doing just the framework is a bit pitiful. Like,
it would
they should
be.
Have the app there, like a visual way to turn your lights on and off when you're on your computer and yep. your phone's upstairs or whatever.
Yep. After that, I've got this is really generic and non-specific, but just continued Photos work. I love the Photos app. I think the Photos app on the Mac is so nice. I was happy with iPhoto until the wheels fell off, and then iPhoto just really didn't you know, it wasn't maintained at the end of its life. And I was so happy whenever Photos was announced and came out. And I use iCloud Photo Library. I've got like a 20,000 photo and video library and growing. And I love the Photos app on the Mac. It's like...
Yeah, and it's really dependable, right? Like...
Yeah.
I never have any trouble with it syncing or not, you know, weird or any weirdness like that. Like, Photos and iCloud Photo Library works flawlessly.
It is one of the main reasons why I pay for iCloud storage. I pay for the $10 2 terabyte storage plan, and that's so I can take photos and videos on the iPhone, and then they just appear on the Mac. And any changes I make, whether it's an album or an edit or deleting, it's just one library on all devices. And the iPhone is like the capture device, and I kind of like enjoy Photos. I do some work with them there, but the Mac is like where I feel like my library lives. And I do a thing, you know, where, like, I take them on the iPhone and then download locally on the Mac, you know, like locally stored. And I've just had a really good experience. I've not had any data loss with that. But just adding more features. I feel like with Photos last year, they did a good job of like moving the ball forward. But some of it was like punting. Was like, now you can use Photos with Mac App Store apps. Like you can do use third party bookmaking apps and services, and they've got that built into the Mac. It needs to be on iOS. It should be there, but it's not. But I don't want them to like make Photos like a platform. I like that they've got the native features for making calendars and books and cards. And I don't, you know, there's nothing like I want to see specifically, but just to see Photos continue to evolve, you know, whether it's more like Aperture, you know, gets more powerful controls. I didn't necessarily like the change last year where they made sidebar the only option. I liked before where you could navigate from the top and not have sidebar. That was a move backward in my opinion, but people for some reason preferred sidebar, and so that's what they did only. But just to see like, you know, a section of the keynote about Photos for the Mac would be nice. You know,
I'll give you one specific thing. The one big feature that I really think they lost with when they killed off iPhoto was the journaling thing.
Do you mean iPhoto journals on iOS?
Yes, it was never on. It never got to the desktop.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, if they did it again, they should do it everywhere.
Yeah.
Because it was on the web, right? You could publish to the web.
Yeah, and there's still the old iMovie guy has an example that you can Google and find. He's left Apple, but
and these were not just like, you know, a boring straight album of pictures. You could put like quotes in between. It was like more like a collage. You could have a calendar of the current time. You could have the weather. You type a little like it was almost like a mixture of like a blog and a photo stream. Right?
It was like iWeb plus iPhoto, like modern.
Yeah, and it was really iOS. Really powerful. You could drag stuff around. It was really great, and I think that's a much better, because what I want them to do is to get rid of the current iCloud photo shared album rubbish.
Yeah,
put in a proper iCloud photo sharing where you can have like what Google Photos does, where you share a family album and it's all, you know, it's all the same, edits go to the same place, you don't have to export to this separate album, and then as the replacement to the weird album stuff they add in back this journaling thing.
Yeah.
Like, that would be my ideal situation there.
Yeah, I think last year was the year that we got Memories, right?
Last week they did what?
Last year was the year that we got Memories.
Yeah.
Or was that the year before?
They had Memories the year before as well.
Okay.
Well, added more Memories last year.
Yeah, they got new features.
And on the Mac last year specifically, they added the extension points for the projects, but I don't think anyone does it.
Yeah, there's like three or four services that use it, and I've never actually used one because I like Apple's better. But the thing with like Memories, like that's cool. But what you're describing, you know, the old iCloud photo journal feature, like that was awesome. Like publishing with your photos, and they had like really good templates. I made a few, but I never maintained them because I think you needed to have all your photos on your device, like on the iPhone or on the iPad. And it was before like iCloud storage. It was back in the MobileMe days. And like now I could actually do that. I could publish it. I could leave it up. I would always have the photos around. But, you know, you couldn't do it on the Mac, like you said. And like that would be actually very cool. I'd like that.
And here's my dream. That journal would then be visible as like an Apple TV screensaver.
Yeah.
It all ties together if they do it. Like, and I think generally they've caught up with all the stuff they, you know, lost when I felt it was there, apart from this journaling thing.
Yeah, that's fair. The thing about you know, shared libraries, like I don't use PhotoStream at all anymore. That's like the private version of like all your last 1,000 photos, et cetera, you know, 30 days, whatever, are like flowing by. That's the old model if you don't want to pay for iCloud storage to get photos from your iPhone to your Mac. I don't use that anymore. I don't care about it. I don't use iCloud photo sharing because the resolutions aren't maintained. The problem with iCloud photo sharing for me is that I can take photos, share them with family, even do like a web link for people without Apple devices to go and download. But my family members never actually go and download the photos. They just depend on me to keep the stream present. And then I've got a separate album for those photos, you know, that I'm kind of like just lingering, it's like lingering there. And I don't like the idea, like, I want to get rid of that. It's like,
yeah. And like, so if you crop your local picture in your local library, it doesn't crop the shared one because it just copies it.
Right.
It sits around there.
Yeah, I like the Google model of you have an album and then you have permissions to share it, you know, and you can and people can add to it, that kind of thing. Like, I think that works. I don't think there's any explicit problem with that. And I've been learning a lot lately about people that have a shared iCloud ID because they share their entire photo library, which, like, I would not do that now or if Apple offered the option, but some control of, like, shared albums I would totally use. Like, this is always an album on my, you know, in my Photos app, and, you can always add people or remove people. And as long as they're added, then it's on their device. They can download it. And it's just like, that's not quite how photo sharing works now. And it's been years since they touched it, too. And it's like, do something there. But back to the Mac request, it's just like, any tweak to like give Photos a new version and give it some features to justify it, and I'll be pleased because I think it's a great app. And I hear people talk it down, like they don't love it. I'm crazy about the Photos app. I love it. Two more things on my list. A true podcast app for the Mac out of iTunes.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
There's so many problems with Podcast Playbook on the Mac. It's great on iOS, but on the Mac, you don't get things like your seat controls. They're not like 30-second skip, etc. You have playlists like show up from iTunes, like music playlists alongside with podcasts. It's just like not the way it needs to look. The sync is rough, which is its own problem. Hopefully it would be better if it was its own app, but that's kind of unrelated. It's just the problem before I mentioned of like you can remotely control direct playback on a HomePod with Apple Music, but you can't with a podcast. It gives you an error that says this item is not in Apple Music, even though it works from iOS because there are apps for that. There's just so many problems with having it built into iTunes. It would be okay if they address those problems in iTunes, but I think the better solution is to have, you know, your own podcast app on the Mac.
Yeah, and it just makes it more discoverable. Like, there'll be an app on the dock that's podcasts.
Yep.
And get there.
Yep.
And I have written down split up iTunes, yeah, which is the thing that comes around every single year. But I really think, you know, they really have to seriously get around to doing this now. Between Apple Music, you'd have like a dedicated music app. Maybe it's Apple Music only. Like, it doesn't do all the old legacy music stuff, like burning a CD and all that rubbish. Like, it'd just be iTunes Match and streaming, potentially.
It'd be like a HomePod or a music app. Yeah.
You could have a TV app, like Apple, you know, what you give your watch now cue, all of that stuff, all separated. And then for people that don't want to move to those services, you just put iTunes in the utilities folder for legacy users and on Windows.
Yeah, yeah. The last thing on my list is a Control Center. I think Control Center is a good concept, especially when it's customizable. You know, it's kind of that way on iOS. And I like to use hot corners on the Mac. I like to use gestures to open up windows and you know, access, you know, like I use almost every Mac feature every day. I don't use dashboard because it's just like, you know, it might as well be gone now. But I use Launchpad. I use Mission Control. I use, you know, multiple desktops. I use the hot corners, which are buried, but they're very useful. I use all those. And I think that, you know, we saw at least like one leaked version of what was identifiable as, I think, like Mavericks at the time. There was a concept of Control Center from the left side of the screen.
Yeah, and this was the old style Control Center where it come up from the bottom and it was like the, you know, the iOS 8 era Control Center.
Yeah.
And it was like that, but a full sidebar on the left of the screen. It would pop up when you press the Apple logo.
Yeah.
And this was an internal build of the operating system, and for whatever reason, they canned it and didn't release it.
Yeah, so they've clearly got a version of that and, you know, decided not to release it. I think some thinking, like, you know, today, we discussed earlier, those need to be rethought and more desktop-like, but some version of that is a good idea. Like, having one place to control your volume and brightness, media controls. Like, right now, that's part of Menu Bar. And part of Today View, if you have like the now playing widget, and it's just kind of spread out. And I think that can be done better on the Mac. And like even the control or the touch bar's control strip has, like, you know, like, has an is another area for that. But I think all that just needs to be, like, rethought on the Mac. Just like, you know, usually they used to go from, you know, they would play around with, like window management, you know, and, like, the Leopards and Leopard, and it was, like, Spaces before Mission Control. And it was, like, they were working on something, and then, they eventually decided, like, Mission Control as it is today is, like, what we want to have. And I think that's okay. I think it's pretty good. Spaces was, like a grid. You'd have, like, top left was, like, one desktop, top right was a desktop. Below that.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. It was like two-dimensional, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which I think is kind of complex for, like, what it is, but it was useful. Like, you could go from here to there easier than like one to, you know, it was pretty good. But I liked that idea that they were, like, every year or so, or every, you know, they were working through that problem of, like, what's the best way to organize your desktop and, like, your workspaces. And it feels like, you know, since, like, Lion, they haven't really thought much about you know, the way that, like, bringing iOS features to the Mac can benefit, and I think it should. So
yeah, like, I feel like, and this isn't strictly true, like, but in general, all of the recent years of macOS has been update the apps to support the iOS features,
like some version, like how Messages is like some version of Messages on iOS, but not fully.
Or, like, Notes is pretty close to a one-to-one.
Mm-hmm. But in some cases, Notes is better on the Mac than on iOS. Like, you know, you can do more things on Notes. Like, you can make folders. I think, like, isn't that something you can't do on?
I don't know. I feel like you should be.
Nested folders. I don't think you can do nested folders.
Yeah, I think you can do one layer on the iPad.
Yeah,
that'd be really dumb if you can't.
Yeah.
You kind of sucked up a lot of what I had. Like I said, I definitely am more invested in the other platforms, especially, you know, just this year. I just think they need so much more on, like, Watch and Siri and stuff. I would have, what I want to do is not use Dropbox anymore. And my big holdover for that is a shared folders, not just shared files.
Yeah, every year we mention.
Yeah.
They're getting closer.
What I want to do is be able to send you my audio by dragging it into a shared folder that we both sign up to once, and then it just appears in your document somehow.
And I literally drag it out when I'm done with it and delete it, and that's so efficient.
Yeah, rather than right now where if I put it in iCloud Drive, I have to copy a link to the individual file, message to you, you have to download it. It's just, you know, a complete pain.
Yeah, I would use Dropbox on my Mac, then we wouldn't have the problem, but I don't want to use Dropbox on my Mac, so... Yeah.
I don't want to use Dropbox on Mac either.
Yeah.
I have, the only reason I have Dropbox at the moment is for some weirdness in how iCloud Drive backs up syncs Xcode projects and stuff. Like, it sometimes offloads the frameworks. Like, it's like, you haven't used this framework in this particular project, so I'll put this in the cloud for you. But it's like, well, if I actually open it up and go to build the project, it doesn't get it back. So that's the only reason I have Dropbox at the moment. I could work around that if I could have a shared folder, because a lot of my, like, client projects I do for apps, I have, like, a shared Dropbox folder with them. Yeah. Where we just go back and forth. So iCloud Drive, add a shared folder. I would love it. That would also tie into shared albums, you know, like proper shared albums in Photos or shared folders in Notes, talking about it. Because we have, at the moment, we work around this for the happy hour. We do all our notes for happy hour in a note, but it's just the same note every week. Like, ideally we would have a shared happy hour folder and then we have one note per episode, but we can't do that. Dark mode. I'm not a huge, like, I'm not, like, licking my lips, like, give me dark mode. But I think it's pretty stupid that at the moment the dark mode on the Mac just changes the dock and the menu bar, and then everything else stays the same.
Yeah.
So figure that out. Do it. You know, you actually have a dark theme.
If dark mode were around, because you can do dark mode on, like, on iOS right now. You can do a dark mode on, like, individual apps, and there's a million ways to turn it on in apps, and that drives me crazy. That's like, there's no uniform way yet. But I don't do it permanently. Like, I have light mode for, like, Tweetbot, for Reader, for Apollo, the Reddit app that I use. But I do turn on dark mode in dark environments. And so most apps have, like, an option to enable based on, like, brightness or sunset and sunrise. And that's what I would want for iOS and Mac, is, like, if it's sunrise, then go dark mode. Or you know, if
which
it's
is
like
what
sunset.
The Apple TV has, right, with its dark appearance.
Which is so good. Like, I'm always delighted when I see, like, oh, it's in dark mode now. Oh, it's in light mode now, based on the time of day. But then also, like, you know how there's an accessibility on iOS to have I think that kind of like dims the bright points of screens. Like if it cannot change from like white to black, then have it at least be dimmer.
Oh, reduce white point. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So how, like, build those all in together. It's like, because you can't expect the web to go dark mode. Like, totally. There's some stuff that's not going to do that. And then also icons. Like, everything that's white shouldn't turn black and vice versa. So in those cases, just like use that reduced white point effect to like a stronger degree.
Yeah, but I don't think for the Mac, I don't think I'd turn on like dark mode all day long. Mm-hmm. But right now, we're recording, you know, quite late at night, and my screen is glaring with this white, you know, white theme. So I would use it like on occasion when I needed it.
Yeah, what you need is True Tone.
Yeah. And then this is technically the all other business section, so I'm going to bring it up.
Okay.
Better free iCloud storage.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, we've been, like, it doesn't need to be repeated, but
yeah.
5 gigabytes is not enough to be usable for anyone. Nobody wants to pay for more storage, regardless of the opportunities are. And I say this as someone who pays for the 200 gigabyte plan, but the base entry-level plan needs to be higher, and Apple can attach it to devices. Like, as long as you keep buying Apple products, they'll give you more storage. That way, they can just make it a small cost on the hardware. Like, you'll pay, you know, if you buy an iPhone X, they'll just guarantee you 5 years of iCloud storage or something, right? Just take it up to 50 gigabytes. I think it would solve a lot of problems. All these people that run around not backing up their photos because they don't want to pay 99 cents a month, which I don't think is ridiculous, right? Like, you can say, oh, it's not very much money. Well, if it's not very much money, Apple can afford to pay for it, right? With 5 gigabyte, just, you might as well have 0 gigabytes. Like, yeah, as soon as you set up your device, you're almost saturating that whole quota. They're doing 200 gigabytes for students now. I think doing 50 gigabytes for everyone that's an Apple device owner. Like, Google will give you 15 gigs free and you don't have to own any of their products. You don't have to pay them any money at all. Yes, they have ads, but the whole point is Google have ads and we buy, you know, $900 phones. Like, I think there's a fair middle ground here, right? Yeah. And the higher end tiers, the 2 terabyte, the 200 gigabyte, if you compare them to Google, they're reasonably priced. Like, actually, Google only just matched them, like, last week or so. It's the free tier where it's the problem. Like, Google offers 15 gigabyte of like drive storage, plus they store all your photos at lower resolution.
Yeah, they did a thing last week where they started doing 30-day trials for the paid tiers. So right now in the US, it's $1 for 50 gigabytes, $3 for 200 gigabytes, and $10 a month for 2 terabytes. And those were those last year's price? Like, last year they changed those? Were they?
Last year they doubled the 1 terabyte to 2 terabyte.
Yeah.
And then made 200 gigabytes and 2 terabytes family sharingable, so you can share the quota.
Like,
that's what they changed last year.
You could pay $20 a month for 2 terabytes, and they got rid of that and made it $10 a month for 2 terabytes and got rid of 1 terabyte. And like, that is, I think the paid plans are pretty good. It's just that $1, it's not that it's $1 for 50 gigabytes. It's that you need to commit to paying monthly, and that's what people object to, not that it's $1. That, you know, Apple can charge they can charge like $24 more per device and then give that for, like, then break even if they wanted to, like, assuming people use one device for like 2 years, like a phone. It's not the money part of it for people or Apple. It's the psychological barrier of, like, you know, on principle needing to pay for what you think to be included. And the fact that it was like, whenever 5 gigabytes was announced, you know, it was a Steve Jobs announcement, like 2012, he framed
2011.
It, in 2011, he framed it as, or was it 2010? Was it 2010?
No, it was iCloud was 2011.
Okay, 2011. It was the summer. It was June of 2011, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so June 2011, Steve Jobs announced it. He says, I'm going to give you 5 gigabytes for free. And he even acknowledges that that's not very much, because he says, It doesn't sound like much, but it's going to go a lot further than you think because we're not going to count your iTunes purchases, which would have been weird anyway if it did. And then he said, and we've got you know iCloud photo stream, so you can move your device. Those don't count either. It's like a month goes by, and you get to move your photos within that time frame. From your phone to your Mac to iPhoto at the time. It's just like they've added a lot more stuff since then, which is good. Like you can use that storage for way more now. You've got way more reason to pay. And the 30-day trial lets you actually try it. The services that are worth paying for. It's just that that's kind of obscure. And if you have more of like 50 gigabytes for free, something to let you, try for a longer period of time, I think that the device limit would be too complicated for Apple, and for users to manage. How many devices do I have? How much storage do I have? In theory, it makes sense, but in practical, I think it's just too complex.
Yeah, a lot of people suggest, you'd get 20 gigabyte per device you own, for instance.
Yeah.
Or even the thing where people say they just give you the size of your, iPhone storage as iCloud. Even that, I think, is too complicated.
Yeah, I think it's. I think in reality, it's not. I wouldn't expect that from Apple. It's just to have, and they haven't not changed the plans. They've changed them twice since introducing them, I believe. And both changes were pretty good. It's just that. Right now, to really try out these services, like a 30-day trial is helpful. It's not nothing. But what you want is to have no payment barrier, no time limit. It's just like you hit a bump and you're like, okay, I've been using these services, really enjoying them. And I rely on iCloud Photo Library and I've been using it for 6 months now. And now I don't want to live without it. So I want to pay Apple, some amount per month or year. And it's just something to change the business model there because like you said, 5 is just about as good as 0. Something we didn't mention earlier that's out, now that was introduced to unveiled a year ago is Messages in iCloud. That's part of iOS 11.4. It's coming to the Mac in some update in 10.13.5. Still in beta as of tonight, but it should be out soon, we expect. But that's another reason to use iCloud, and pay for it. You kind of feel like you're getting something for the money.
The thing. Yeah. I know people are Apple wants to keep their services revenue up. For a start, iCloud storage is a small fraction of that pie. So I don't think even if they did it for free right now, it would even make much of a difference on that number because it's the fourth component of that business. Second, you've got to go for a slightly longer term outlook. You're the person that has bought that. You're like a 16-year-old kid, right? You've got your first ever iPhone. You're loving it. But you don't want to ask your parents to make a subscription on your credit card. You don't have a card of your own. And you can be 16 and not be able to pay on, just logistics. Or you can be 30 and be why should I pay Apple $1 a month? I bought this phone. I should be able to do stuff with it. Separating out, this is a service. This is a device. That argument doesn't hold any water to me. These are integrated experience, right? It's software, hardware, and services. Apple gives you loads of free services. iMessage, you don't have to pay to use iMessage. Sending a message from your device to somebody else's phone is not free for Apple, right? They absorb the cost because they know it makes the platform better. And say you're the 16-year-old kid, you have 2 years of photos that you're not backing up anywhere because there isn't really a good way to do it apart from iCloud Backup, and iCloud Backup will cost you money because you'll hit the 5 gigabyte cap instantly, and then you lose all your pictures, and someone tells you, if you bought an Android phone, Google would have all your pictures for you for free. There's that element where your next phone might not be an iOS device just purely on that basis alone. Because I think that's a really, really compelling argument. It is lower resolution. It's not originals, but it's not 1 megapixel. It's 8 or 10 or 12 or something. It's a decently high number in the first place.
Yeah.
And second, if you give someone 50 gigabytes, they get to use iCloud Photo Library. Their library expands, right? And eventually, they're going to hit the limit on 50. But at that point, I think you're going to have a lot more happy people being yes, I need to pay to keep this going, as well as adding plenty of other iCloud features that use that space. You could do iCloud Time Machine on the Mac. That's a reason to pay for iCloud, for Mac users. You could do Messages in iCloud, another reason to do it on the thing. And you can just build up all these different ways. You're not using up people's space for the sake of it. You're offering compelling features, and people will get on that train. But right now, there are just so many people that aren't even, they've never even used iCloud. They've even tried iCloud Photo Library. Right, and it's such a good thing, right? It syncs, it backs up, It's so good. Like, the customer satisfaction is so good, but most people don't have it.
Yeah.
Like, so they're never going to have that satisfaction.
Yeah. What would it take? So a couple of things here for me is, one is, I think that the solution here isn't that Apple changes the numbers next week at WWDC and they've got new pricing, new structure and everything. And like, okay, now we're good for the next 10 years. It's that every few years they need to keep revisiting it, which they have been doing, except for the free tier.
Yeah, they changed all the pay tiers, yeah. And the pay tiers are all competitive, right? Yeah. You look at Google Storage, Apple even beats them on some things because you have to pay $2 minimum to get 100 gigabytes on Google, and Apple that you get 50 gigabytes for $1, right?
Yeah.
So you can pay less, and the 2 terabyte plan's the same. It's just the entry level free thing.
Yeah. So that's what, put something out that if you see it next week, it's like, that's what I want to see. Like, what is it specifically that, like, what number of storage for free do you think is satisfactory? Like, that they
did
next week.
I think they should go to
50.
I think it should be, even if they didn't even make the, like, they could keep the 200 gigabyte plan at $299. Like, they didn't even make the price cheaper on it. Just take the free one. The thing that you pay $1 for a month for now, that should be what you get for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really care what happens to the other plans. Because the other plans are compelling in that you can share them with your family, right? So if you pay $299 and you have a family of five, well, you know, you're not even paying that much per person. Like, it's just that 50 gigabyte thing. I think if you own an Apple device, if you buy Apple devices every year, they should jump at the opportunity to give you more than 5 gigs of storage.
Yeah, and for education, they're doing now, where before it was 5 gigabytes, you couldn't even pay for more. Now they're doing 200 gigabytes for free. You still can't pay for more, but you get 200 gigabytes for an iCloud student account for education. So for consumers, it wouldn't be crazy to do 50 gigabytes for free. So the paid 200 gigabyte plan for $3 and then 2 terabytes for $10. Part of me wonders if they ought to have a higher plan than 2 terabytes now. Like, I imagine it's possible that someone would run out of space with that plan too. And that, but then you run, the next question is like, how high, like how much are you willing to charge? You know, is it infinite? You know, can you pay Apple $200 a month for like, you know, some crazy amount of data? And maybe there should be like an unlimited plan. I don't know, but, I know that the most amount of frustration comes from the free side. And that's, so I'm with you there. Next week.
I'll just close with this, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only reason my family backs up their pictures is I pay for their storage.
Oh, the only reason my family doesn't actively delete pictures from their phone, because if you don't do that, then you get a warning that your phone is out of space. And there's two warnings. There's literally your phone's out of space or your iCloud storage is out of space. And, you know, the average person in my family doesn't know the difference.
Yep.
And I can buy them a 256 gigabyte iPhone, and they'll get a message that their iCloud's out of space because it's only 5 gigabytes for free, and they think that they need to delete their photos because the warning is that they can't back up, and you need to like delete a lot of photos to back up to iCloud for free. Fortunately, I pay for the 2 terabyte amount, and you can do family sharing now, which is excellent. Before, I was paying for individual upgrades for each family member for that reason. But like you said, yeah.
I've sat down, I've told them how good it is, I've told them what it does, I've told them, you know, you need to back up your pictures, otherwise they might get lost. If you lose your phone, you're going to be screwed, and nobody wants to pay that money, you know, like,
yeah.
It's just simple as that. Like, the only reason, you know, I know that my, you know, brothers and pictures and my parents' pictures are safe is because I pay for it. Yeah, and it's not a monetary thing, it's not like, they can't afford it.
They don't see the value in it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And like, this is where Apple should step in, you know, and forcibly do it by making it free. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go. Like, I don't know. There is no argument for me that makes 5 gigabytes, regardless of how many devices you have or anything of the sort, like, how that can be correct. It just doesn't sit right.
Okay, I'm going to end on one more thing that's kind of business related, which is I've kind of taken a position as thinking it's ridiculous to complain about this product and where is it? Because at the end of the day, it's just a charger. But AirPower, I don't think it's coming next week. Guy Rambo of Notify Mac, one of his hobbies is digging into the code and seeing if that neat animation on the, you know, where your iPhone has like a lock screen animation that shows like it's charging now is present in the code, and it's been gone for a while. And so based on that as an indicator, he believes that it's not coming soon. Like maybe it'll be iOS 12 or in September, which I think is possible, but I'm just going to put it out there. It'd be nice to see. Just get that out of the way. You know, because like after, you know, technically it can be like anytime this year, and Apple just gave us a sneak peek last year. But like, you know, after WWDC, like then it's probably the keynote in September with the new iPhones. And then it's like harder to justify them showing, you know, it a year ago as a sneak peek, you know?
Yeah, like I don't think when they sneak peeked it in September that, you know, they were thinking, oh, we really want it to come out next September.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, clearly,
you said next year. like
yeah,
in a year's
clearly
time.
It's an as soon as possible thing. They've just hit whatever weird robot they hit. There's a rumor going out at the moment, by the way. Like, I don't even know where this originated from, but somehow everyone on Reddit believes that it's because the pad was getting too hot when charging three things at once, and it was causing safety problems. I have dug through to find that I cannot find the source on this, but that is the current, you know, scuttlebutt flying around.
That's a hot rumor.
Just completely made up. But there you go. And I would love AirPower once it comes. I think it's literally like, I as soon as they're ready to release it, they will. I don't think it's like, oh, we're going to hold it back for WWDC. It's this clever marketing plan. It's just whenever, if it was ready in February, it would have come out in February.
Yeah.
If it was ready tomorrow, it would come out tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I've got my $180 ready to buy it. So
I mean, yeah, we don't even confirm pricing.
yeah. So, all right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. Next week, you know, like you said, I will be at WWDC with our colleague Jordan Kahn. Our colleague Greg Barbosa will be there attending as a developer. There's one event after the keynote in particular that I'm excited about, which is the WWDC Run with Nike Run Club. And I've found my way into that. It's on Wednesday. And I'm actually skipping the Sonos event to do this run as part of WWDC. I'm really excited about that. And then our colleague Michael Stieber will be going to the Sonos event for 9to5 Mac. But, you know, if you're at WWDC and you see me, say hi. I love to hear from our listeners, especially in person. That'll be awesome. And, you know, don't be shy. I won't. And, any question or anything like that, I'm all ears. I'm very excited to be attending the keynote, to be in San Jose from Saturday through Thursday. And our next episode, I think we'll stick to our Wednesday schedule. And, you know, we'll work around, you know, the events of next week, but the next episode will be after WWDC. So it won't be Monday after the keynote. We'll at least take a day to digest everything and like catch up on the website and see what's happening. But we'll be back next week, and that'll be the show where we talk about what happened at the keynote and beyond.
That'll be our rundown.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. It's coming up so fast, and it's been like, you know, kind of a slower year, so I'm excited to see what happens. And with that being said, we'll be back next week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach. Benjamin, you are?
BZA Mayo.
You can also email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.